The avian flu responsible for killing millions of wild and domestic birds across Colorado has now been discovered in some other Colorado wildlife.
It's called highly pathogenic avian influenza. And right now, geese are its most common victims.
So we have identified several cases of HPAI, or highly pathogenic avian influenza, in other free-ranging wildlife, so a black bear from Huerfano County.
According to scientists, more than 18,000 seal pups died, and the deaths are now being blamed on a surprising threat, the virus that we know as bird flu.
But globally, since 2021, the World Organization for Animal Health says more than 200 million birds have been killed or culled to contain the virus. It's seeing the worst ever outbreak.
There have been cases where the virus spreads from infected birds to mammals. Now researchers fear it may be moving from one mammal to another.
There's a possibility that avian flu can be transmitted to people and pets also.
This avian influenza outbreak in the last 3 years has been one of the largest threats to wildlife globally. We just can't wait for it to hit human populations. We need to be working upstream to look at what's happening in these wildlife populations.
H5N1, also known as avian influenza, bird flu, or HPAI, which is highly pathogenic avian influenza, is in every corner of the world, except ours, so far. But that could be about to change.
It's only a matter of time, we think, until the virus does get to New Zealand.
The deadly H5N1 avian influenza strain, also known as bird flu, is one step closer to arriving on our shores after it was detected on the Antarctic mainland at the weekend. This influenza strain has already killed millions of animals around the world, and there are fears it could pose a real threat to Aotearoa's endangered bird life.
It could also, depending on how the virus has mutated by then, be the next big human pandemic.
I think that H5N1 right now looks like the thing that, you know, we're most aware of that could potentially become a pandemic or an epidemic among humans. We can't say for sure this is it, but it's something that we can see happening, and there are several reasons to be quite worried about it, and potentially quite a bit more worried about it than we might have been 5 years ago.
The risk is probably pretty low, but you know, the consequences of that risk actually coming true are pretty scary.
I'm Alexia Russell, and today on The Detail, a look at H5N1, the possibility of it tearing through our bird populations, and the risk of the virus jumping to humans. We'll hear from MPI's Chief Veterinary Officer, Dr. Mary Van Andel, about the plan that's in place for holding it off as long as possible, and for dealing with it if or when it gets here.
You'll see the Ministry for Primary Industries, the Department of Conservation, the Ministry of Health working together. We'll be asking the public to keep an eye out for sick and dead birds as they are now and to ring into the Exotic Pest and Disease Hotline. We'll be reminding people to not touch dead birds. We'll be asking people to keep a lookout for clinical signs in other animals. Report those to their veterinarians, report those to the Exotic Pest and Disease Hotline. We'll be asking people to listen to public messaging and do those things so that we can all kind of get the best path through this for New Zealand.
Bird flu's been around since late last century, but outbreaks are getting more extensive and widespread. We're now seeing it move from poultry farms to wild bird populations and into mammals, cows, cats on dairy farms, ferrets, minks, sea lions and bears, to name a few, and to humans. It's something that bothers US-based Kiwi virologist Dr. Richard Webby.
Had you asked me 6 weeks ago what the chance of finding this virus in cows, I would have said none. So it's a completely new event for us. We think we know this virus, and then sort of something happens next week that teaches us that we didn't really know anything about it. So it still would rather be inside a bird replicating than anywhere else. But anytime it does get into a mammal, that at least theoretically gives that virus a little bit more opportunity to change and perhaps be a little bit more mammal-like, a little bit more able to infect mammals, including humans.
And Otago University evolutionary biologist and virologist Professor Gemma Geegan.
what's changed in this virus in particular is the genetic code is switched so that it can now infect a broader range of host species. And so it's enabled the virus to spread globally. We're the last remaining continent where the virus hasn't been found yet.
Newsroom journalist Mark Dould first wrote about the virus over a year ago, asking in a headline, is New Zealand ready for the next pandemic?
It's worth noting that I wasn't necessarily saying we know exactly what the next pandemic will look like or when it might happen, but we know that there will be one at some stage, right? It doesn't have to be this year or next year or even this decade, but this is the sort of thing that happens in the world, just like the next earthquake, particularly down here in Wellington. You know, it's going to happen. And so there's a value to being prepared in general, but also being alert to what the threats might be, what we might need to be looking out for as an early warning of, hey, maybe this actually looks like it could turn into a pandemic. Should we really, you know, move more into the to use a term that people may not have positive associations with, higher alert level?
Oh, is it a misnomer to call H5N1 a bird flu, given that we've seen it now in cows in the US, ferrets in Europe, minks, sea lions?
It's probably not unfair to call it a bird flu. It originated in birds. It's still, you know, birds are the majority of cases worldwide for this virus. And if you think about swine flu and the 2009 pandemic that we had, we called that swine flu kind of all the way through, although scientists did also use the, you know, technical term of H1N1, I think it was, which may be a bit more precise. So calling it bird flu is fine as long as we don't use that or take that to mean that it represents no potential future harm to humans, because it does.
Ah. Now, this strain, though, has been around for quite a while, hasn't it? Although not in New Zealand.
That's right. So for H5N1 in particular, that's been known about since the mid to late 1990s. The first sort of confirmed outbreak of that in humans was in 1997. It was 18 people in Hong Kong were infected via their interactions in live bird markets. And the city ended up culling all of the poultry and ducks and geese and other live birds in its markets, shutting those down for a while, disinfecting them, and then restarting them. The particular variant, you could say, or strain of H5N1 that we're talking about today and that we're seeing today, that has been spreading around the world since 2020. It's been called variously an epizootic, which means an epidemic among animals, or a panzootic, a pandemic among animals. It's got to every continent now, including Antarctica, and it's now increasingly making that leap from birds, where H5N1 up until now has been confined to mammals, and potentially even spreading between mammals.
Just to clarify, when you say every continent, we're still free of it here and Australia, I believe.
That's true. So New Zealand and Australia were free of it. Australia did have a small outbreak in 2020 in poultry farms, but they managed to cull those chickens and eliminate that. New Zealand, we've never had any form of highly pathogenic, i.e. a very serious bird flu introduced to New Zealand. And as far as we know, New Zealand is still totally free of H5N1 as well.
And is that our biosecurity or is that our geographic isolation?
It's a bit of both. So it's been found in two different locations in Antarctica, both just south of the southern tip of South America, if you can kind of imagine that in your head. So a decent distance from New Zealand still.
It has previously been detected on the islands between South America and Antarctica over the past few months, but this is the first time that it's been confirmed on that mainland. So it's alarming, but it's not all that surprising given how geographically widespread this virus has become now globally.
And that's among wild birds. Samples were taken of birds there and determined to, you know, that they had H5N1. So it is, you know, spreading and it's getting closer to us. In terms of why we don't have it yet, that geographic isolation is really important. One of the ways that H5N1 spreads, and avian influenza in general, is that it spreads quite well in ducks, which can catch it, they can transmit it, but they very, very rarely have any negative symptoms themselves from it. The good thing for New Zealand is we have very few migratory duck species. In fact, none that come from overseas. Very occasionally we'll get a duck blown over from Australia, but that's not a real worry for us. And in the species that we do have migrating between New Zealand and other countries, including countries where there are H5N1 outbreaks, such as in East Asia and Southeast Asia, those species are very likely to, if they catch this H5N1, die before they actually make it to New Zealand. So that's sort of a silver lining, I guess you could say.
So we're talking about like godwits and gannets?
Definitely godwits, those sorts of seabirds and shorebirds. It is H5N1 is being detected in seabird colonies and shorebird colonies, and a lot of those species are migratory and they come to New Zealand. But the current sort of scientific advice is any given bird that is infected with H5N1, when it leaves, say, China, the time it takes for it to get to New Zealand, it would die of the virus before it gets here. And then we also do have our biosecurity requirements. We don't import, for example, raw milk from anywhere. We only import cheese based on raw milk from Switzerland and the EU, and that's subject to pretty strict biosecurity controls. We don't import live poultry or live cattle, and we have quite strict testing whenever we do find ourselves importing eggs as well. And so you've got those protections at the border around biosecurity, and we've got the benefit of the geographic isolation protecting us from wild introductions.
But internationally, concern over H5N1 is ramping up. Experiments confirmed in 2011 that the virus could mutate to spread between mammals. There was a large outbreak on a mink farm in Spain last year.
And now in the United States, we have it transmitting between cattle, and the genome of that virus, which has now been sequenced, does show one of those mutations that makes it easier for it to transmit between mammals has been sort of naturally acquired through making that jump to cattle and then starting to spread among the cattle.
There is a real possibility that this is a virus that could never be a successful human pathogen. I don't necessarily buy into that myself. I think this is a virus that, again, it's very much a bird virus, likes to be in birds, but given the right opportunities, then it could make that transition.
That's virologist Dr. Webby again. So what happens? What is the danger to the cattle and then to us?
So the danger is twofold here. One is the impact on animals from a conservation, biodiversity perspective, and economic perspective, when you've got things like cattle or poultry that we farm, for economic productivity and in agricultural production, potentially threatened by this virus. And then there's a separate but related threat of the more this virus spreads, particularly among mammals, the more natural selection acts on it to get better at spreading among mammals. So we saw this with COVID, where, particularly these ongoing little Omicron variants that we keep getting, that they're each a little bit better than the last one, and that can spark a little bit of a wave. That's just happening because the virus is still spreading, and as long as it's spreading, it's in this evolutionary environment where it is challenged to acquire mutations that make it easier for it to spread. When the virus is spreading just among birds, that's not as big a deal for us as mammals because they're different enough from us that there's not a selection pressure on the virus to acquire mutations that can, harm us. But now it's in cows, and the risk of an outbreak that is completely uncontained is that's just more opportunity for it to get better and better at transmitting, in this case, between cows, which are different from people, but much more like people than a bar-tailed godwit, for example.
But it's those godwits that fly in from the Arctic Circle, as well as seabirds on our sub-Antarctic islands, that the government has an eye on.
The thing about the godwits, it is interesting, isn't it? The godwits have come here every year forever, haven't they? Mm. And highly pathogenic avian influenza hasn't come with them. The change that we've seen is that as the disease has been able to persist in wildlife and has tracked down South America and got into the Antarctic Peninsula and onto the Antarctic continent, that means that the distance to travel has changed, hasn't it? So it seems as if this
incursion of the disease into the Antarctica is where we need to be keeping our attention.
MPI's Mary Van Andel says we've seen this virus change, so instead of being restricted to chickens and other farmed birds, it's spilled over into wild populations, which means we've had to think differently about how to manage the disease.
So what we're dealing with here, differently to a lot of other biosecurity threats, is that it's most likely not going to arrive here with human activity. If it does arrive here, the most likely way it would come would be with migrating wild birds. And what scientists have told us is that they expect the disease to spread around from the Antarctic Peninsula, where it's been detected in February this year, and spread around the Antarctic continent. And what we know is that birds from the Ross Sea area do come to New Zealand.
And have they put a timeline on that?
I think we've heard quite a lot of different estimates about how the disease might move around Antarctica. But what we don't have is a continuous presence of humans to observe and scientists to observe in Antarctica. And so what we really need to do, in my opinion, is remain vigilant and keep on preparing, working on our plans here in New Zealand. You know, up till now, New Zealand, Australia, and the Pacific remain free from this strain of highly pathogenic avian influenza. But as it moves, we need to remain alert and continue to prepare ourselves.
So where are the front lines? I mean, would you, for instance, be sending testing kits down to scientists down at Scott Base?
So we've been working with our colleagues from the Department of Conservation who have presences on our subantarctic islands for more than a year now and have sent test kits to them. And, you know, when they see unusual mortality events, they do sample those, investigate those and take the relevant precautions. So that is an activity that we're doing. We're very connected to the different scientists from the various universities who are doing work on the ice in the season when that's possible. And all of those scientists are well informed about how to report a case, how to sample for a case, and also how to stop the spread of disease that might be linked to their activities.
Right. In terms of just looking at birds for the moment, I mean, obviously New Zealand particularly vulnerable. We already have a great number of species on the brink of extinction. How disastrous could it be if this strain of avian flu arrives?
So we have observed severe impacts on biodiversity and native wildlife in other parts of the world. And for that reason, our scientists here and our colleagues at the Department of Conservation are working on what measures we could take to try and limit those measures. But certainly, as you said, very possible to have severe impacts. And we're in a kind of unique situation because highly pathogenic avian influenza hasn't been this far south. Previously, wildlife here haven't been exposed to it. And so really, it's as we've talked about for the possibility of it coming into New Zealand, we need to, you know, be very vigilant and take measures that are possible for us. But, you know, management options are limited because avian influenza in wild birds isn't something that's going to be able to be eradicated.
DOC is trialling vaccines on captive bird populations, but the whole thing's tricky. They need to be caught first, then given two doses 1 month apart, and the immunity doesn't last forever.
Those vaccines are being trialled to make sure that there aren't any negative impacts on those individuals before the Department of Conservation makes any choices about how to deploy vaccine as one of the tools in the toolbox that we might have in an ongoing management effort against this type of disease. So we need to go through all that thinking.
How far advanced is that thinking? I mean, have you been able to map out likely scenarios, or is that a bit of a mystery as to how it will play out?
You know, as we've talked about, because we haven't had highly pathogenic avian influenza in our region, certainly not this far south before, we don't have experience here with our native wildlife or our production systems about how that might look One of the things that we do have, because of our geographic isolation, is we have been able to be in contact with our colleagues in those countries where this has happened. And we've been able to ask them questions. We've been able to learn from them what has worked, what has not worked, what would they do differently. And so we're certainly taking advantage of those opportunities to figure out what a good plan for New Zealand might look like. One of the things that has been shared with me by those colleagues is that they wished that they had had the opportunity to form a common understanding about some of what the challenges might be with wildlife, with commercial production, and even with human health early in the piece, so that that didn't have to happen under urgency. And that is one of the fortunate situations that we've had here in New Zealand, is that we've been able to get together with our colleagues in the Department of Conservation, with our colleagues at the Ministry of Health, and discuss what we might need to get in place and what we can learn from these other countries.
So at what stage do you push the alarm bells? I mean, are we at that stage now?
I think that it really depends what you mean by alarm bells. I think we've been working hard to prepare across the different agencies for multiple months now, in terms of what we've been advising to the public, is that, you know, they continue to report any if they see dead or dying birds in, you know, three or more of those, that they report those to the Exotic Pest and Disease Hotline at 0800 18 99 66, that they don't touch those, that they wait for instructions from the Exotic Disease Investigator. And we've also been speaking to our colleagues, our veterinary colleagues, you know, about what actions they should take, when they should ring the 0800 number, talking about reporting, talking about increased biosecurity at the farm level and what our plans might be should it happen. So it really depends what you mean about the alarm bells there. I think we need to not panic, but I do think we have to be vigilant and prepared.
That's it for today. The details supported by RNZ and New Zealand On Air. Thanks to Dr. Mary Van Andel and Mark Dulder. This episode was engineered by Jeremy Ansell and produced by Phil Vine. I'm Alexia Russell. Ka kite.